The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 12, Hope.
Grace, come in. You're soaking, come in. I'll get the fire on.
James nodded as the soldier saluted him and left, then led Dr. Palmer to one of the armchairs in his office. He sat her down and switched on the electric heater. The room was spartan and dimly lit by a standing lamp in one corner. After a few moments, the bars of the heater gave off a warm red illumination. James fished around in a drawer of his desk and took out a bottle of scotch. He poured two glasses, placed one upon the arm of Grace's chair, then took a seat opposite. He sipped his drink thoughtfully, regarding her with his dark eyes.
"That's a 20-year-old single malt you're missing out on," he said quietly, pointing to her untouched glass.
Grace shifted her gaze back into the room and regarded her whiskey with a sorrowful look.
"It's all over," she whispered quietly. "All over." "Oh, come now, Grace, that's not like you," said Colin reassuringly. "I'm sure we will find a way through this."
"Oh, Colin," sobbed Grace, her tears suddenly let loose. "There were so many of them. First Patty and the team, Dan, Keith, Sally. Oh God, it's like a nightmare. And now this, all those innocent people, Colin, and it's all my fault." She shook and sobbed.
James moved over to her and sat on the arm of her chair, self-consciously placing an awkward hand on her shoulder. "It will all work out, Grace. You'll see," he said quietly.
Grace brushed off his hand and stood up, composing herself once again.
I'm sorry, Colin. It got the better of me for a second there. I was stupid."
She wiped her eyes on her sleeve, pacing the room anxiously. Colin held out a drink. She gave a tired smile and took it off him.
"Oh well, there's always booze."
She laughed grimly and took a long gulp of her whiskey. Alex was still stiff from the night before as he walked painfully through the narrow concrete corridors until he arrived at a set of imposing steel doors. To his surprise, he saw two armed guards standing either side. He had never known the need for internal security before. The guards appeared to be expecting his arrival and let him pass with a cursory nod, one of them radioing through for the doors to be opened. Alex walked through the entrance into a huge control room filled with the bustle of personnel, all working at vast banks of computer terminals. On a raised platform at the far end of the busy room, Alex spied the tall figure of Dr. Henschel, who stood gazing out through a massive sloping window set into the bare walls. Alex approached him nervously, nodding to Ed Keeler, whom he spotted talking heatedly to a group of technicians. Keeler nodded back, but Alex thought he detected a strange look of guilt in the man's eyes.
"Dr. Henschel, you asked to see me," said Alex, as he approached the white-haired man.
Henschel didn't seem to hear, staring out through the window with his back to Alex, his huge gnarled hands clasped tightly behind his back. Alex followed the direction of the old man's gaze, beyond the walls of the fortress. It was like some scene from hell itself. As far as the eye could see, fires and smoke belched from the plains of scarred black rock and ash. Deep fissures split the earth and all about. Through the dust and flames was endless movement. Thousands upon thousands of dark, distant figures moved tirelessly forward. A few were vaguely recognizable as humanoid, but most were formed from every conceivable nightmare. Huge mutated limbs, claws, fangs and fur, the stuff of the mind's worst fears. Slowly, inexorably they came onwards, marching, crawling or slithering, to dash themselves against the walls of the outpost in a spray of fire and plumes of choking black smoke. Endless was their movement, like the pounding of the sea against the cliffs. About this countless army of terror darted innumerable cyclones and zephyrs of thick red dust. As if with a will of their own, they appeared to direct and drive on the relentless onslaught. Low booms and shudders ran through the walls with each explosion.
"They will break us down eventually,"
came the low voice of Dr. Henschel, as he gazed out over the plains.
"It is inevitable. We must hope to resist them until our new weapons are ready in greater numbers.
He turned and gazed deeply into Alex's eyes. "Lower the shields," he called to a technician, and slowly huge metal shutters covered the windows, blocking out the terrifying scene.
"I have decided to accept your proposal, Alexei," he began. "You will take a small team and infiltrate the British base. You will kill Dr. Palmer and Mr. Sullivan, and as you say, sever the source of their and the Americans' knowledge."
Alex went pale with shock.
"My plan was to capture them. There is no need to kill them. They will be useful to us. We have always striven to recruit the people with the best knowledge. Why should this be different?" "The time has come, Alexei. The decisive time. Now is the moment where everything hangs in the balance. We must neutralize the human threat so that we may deal with our battle here."
Alex started to protest, but Henschel held up a stern hand. He had a cold, almost feverish look in his eye.
"I remember a time many years ago, Alexei, when my colleagues and I first made those terrifying steps into the field, towards enlightenment. We realized the dangers. We took action, direct and brutal action. I remember a young, cruel and eager security commissar, freshly assigned control of our fledgling research. My fellow conspirators urged me to murder that young man, as we destroyed all traces of our work. They said he could not be trusted, that we wouldn't turn this zealous man from the ties of Mother Russia. But I saw into the heart of that man. I saw that what he did for the spirit of idealism. I knew that he, like the others, would recognize the true cause, that we were chosen as protectors. You are a great man, Alexei. Do not let us down at this crucial moment."
The old man was speaking passionately now, and placed a comradely hand upon Alex's shoulder. Alex, by comparison, was thoroughly unmoved by Henschel's speech, finding the man's oratory clumsy and cliched. It made him distinctly anxious.
"You must carry out this task for the greater good. This time is a test for us all."
Alex nodded his head forlornly. He felt numb inside.
"Our new weapons are ready in small quantities, Alexei. You will travel in the prototype of our latest aircraft, which will revolutionize our capability in the field. Pick a small team of trusted men, and do this for me, Alexei."
Alex stumbled back to his dreary quarters. The whole world seemed to be going mad, he thought, as he drifted into a fevered sleep on his cold, hard bed. Thomas made his weary way back to his room. At least he was mercifully alone, now that they had moved him to the senior technician's wing of the housing levels. He fumbled for his key and opened the door, dumping his papers on the overflowing work table, and then sitting on the edge of his bed with his head in his hands. All the excitement of today's events had gone out of him, and he no longer felt like looking at his work. He stared forlornly around his room. He stopped in curiosity. He had just noticed a white square of paper by the foot of the door. He walked over and picked it up. It must have been slipped through the gap under the door, he thought. He unfolded it and read it absent-mindedly.
"Dear Thomas, sorry my friends are all asses. I tried to catch up with you, but you disappeared. Maybe see you in the library again soon. Love, Susan."
Thomas nearly choked with joy. He sat down at the table, rereading the note. He laid it down carefully, as he suddenly thought about his chance meeting with Grace earlier that day. He tried to remember what she had been saying, something about a plane crash and electromagnetic spikes. A thought was niggling at the back of his mind. Something didn't sit right. He opened his notes to go through them again. There was a sudden knock at the door, harsh and urgent. He jumped up and fumbled with the lock, opening it a little. Mandelson pushed his big, unshaven face through the gap. He was gasping and out of breath. When he saw Thomas, he let out a huge sigh of relief, leaning heavily against the doorframe.
"Oh, thank God. Are you all right, Tom? Mr. Sullivan," gasped Mandelson.
Fine, thank you. Shouldn't I be?"
stuttered Thomas, his heart pounding.
"I've been searching everywhere for you. Somebody said you'd gone up top. But I missed you. I've been searching for hours."
He trailed off, wiping the sweat from his brow.
"No, I'm fine, thank you. Good night,"
said Thomas, shutting the door.
Yes, good night, sir,"
stuttered Mandelson as the door closed. Thomas grinned to himself. leaning with his back against the door. It served Mandelson right for not doing his job properly, thought Thomas to himself with a mischievous smirk. The brutish man usually spent his entire day in the canteen when he should have been looking after Thomas, but tonight he would have been running around frantic for hours. He didn't understand why he still needed an escort anyway. He just assumed that he had been forgotten about again. He sat back down at his desk and reread Susan's note. "So, do you really think this is the end?" asked Colin, breaking the long silence. They had been quietly drinking now for the past quarter of an hour. Grace gave a long sigh from where she sat, staring into the electric fire.
"If we really did cause the accident," she said slowly, as if the words didn't quite fit, "then what with the rest of it? I think I'll face criminal charges. And the project will be shelved, yes. Once press gets hold of it, we'll never work again."
James sighed and looked away from her. He seemed to be struggling with himself over whether or not to divulge something.
"Grace," he said slowly, "something is going on that just doesn't feel right."
He paused for a moment, and she looked up at him in curiosity.
"There are a lot of things I don't have answers to at present. Too many questions. But just be careful, Grace. I'll be able to make more sense soon, I hope, but for the time being, just be careful."
Grace looked at him for a long moment, then stood up with a half smile.
"It's a little too late to be careful, I think," she laughed grimly, and with that she bid him good night and left.
James sat motionless in his chair for a long time after Grace had gone. Eventually he stood, went over to the phone on his desk and dialed a number.
"Aubrey, it's James here. Yes, sorry it's a little late. Have you had any luck getting hold of that information?"
"Well, how classified?"
"But why should that be?"
"Just see what you could do, would you?"
"Thanks, Aubrey. I owe you one."
"Yes, good night."
He put down the receiver, and picking up the half-empty bottle of scotch, went back to his seat by the fire.
More curious, he thought to himself. Why would the murder of Professor Lambert be subject to such heavy secrecy that even Aubrey was having trouble getting in on it?
He could get into a lot of trouble for poking his nose into this, he thought to himself. Still, he was in a lot of trouble already.
Alex stepped out into the huge hangar and gasped in awe. There were row upon row of armoured vehicles and tanks, all built to withstand the hostile environment of the field. He followed Keeler between a column of huge tracked vehicles, all of them freshly painted and pristine, with none of the telltale signs of corrosion acquired in the field.
"So, what do you think of our army?" grinned Keeler, walking across the hangar. "I had no idea. How have you ever kept it all secret?"
breathed Alex, gazing around. "It has not been easy," Ed smiled.
"But, as you know, Alex, the field allows us to appropriate the necessary materials fairly easily. They told me that you were responsible for a lot of the funding in the early days."
Alex smiled gravely.
"We did a few bank jobs," he murmured absent-mindedly. "How are the aircraft doing?" he asked, attempting to change the subject.
"Oh, Alex," laughed Keeler with a newfound animation.
"Since we got that new information from the Sullivan boy, we're close to a real breakthrough. But you'll see for yourself soon enough. We are very pleased with the prototype."
"Did you know that Henschel ordered us to kill Sullivan and Dr. Palmer?" said Alex bluntly.
Keeler stopped and gazed at the floor for a second.
"You were a close friend of Palmer's up until recently, weren't you?"
said Alex. Keeler nodded morosely, then gave a long sigh.
"We must all make sacrifices, Alex. You know that more than any of us."
His voice became more lively as he spoke, as if, thought Alex, he was speaking somebody else's words.
"We have no choice now. We've come too far. This is the deciding moment where we all must gather our courage."
"But wouldn't you prefer them on our side?"
asked Alex incredulously.
"Sullivan's ideas are revolutionizing even your work. You have said so yourself."
Keeler looked shocked and hurt.
"We do not need them," he yelled, becoming angry.
Our new army will destroy the threats and bring peace back to the world.
Alex was taken aback by the extreme nature of his passionate and naive reply. Everybody he spoke to in the fortress seemed gripped by the same hysterical fundamentalism, fueled by Henschel's unquenchable ardour. People Alex had been close to only a year ago seemed complete strangers now. They had lost all sense of perspective, hidden away, frightened.
"You wanted to show me something, Ged," said Alex, trying to calm Keela down again.
"Yes, yes, you'll like this, Alex."
He grinned excitedly again, and led Alex off to a large steel door in the far wall of the hangar.
"We've just finished these," he smiled,
slipping a swipe card through the panel on the lock.
"God is with us,"
he muttered faintly to himself, and walked through the door. Alex paused for a second. In the long years he had known Keela, he had never heard him make any positive reference towards religion. Out of many of the leading members of the field research, Keela had always remained aloof from the spiritual leanings of his colleagues. But since he had returned, Alex had noticed a definite religious fervour in everybody's words. There seemed a new extremism creeping into arguments, everybody referring to the cause. Alex understood the dangers and the threat that approached, but he refused to regard himself as being on some holy crusade. That would just be as dangerous in itself. He followed Keela down the corridor with a troubled feeling at the back of his mind.
"Welcome to our armory," announced Keela proudly,
leading him into a large engineering works crowded with the bustle of workers and machinery. The walls were lined with racks of bulky-looking weapons. Keela led him over to one.
"And this is our latest baby," he said,
taking down a huge squat-barreled gun and heaving it onto a nearby work surface.
"We finally got you guys a reliable weapon that won't explode in your face."
"Sounds promising,"
muttered Alex.
"What's the ammunition?"
he asked, studying the large oval maw of the ugly weapon. He tried to lift it and gasped at the weight.
"Jesus," he exclaimed. "What's it made out of, lead?"
Keela looked horrified at his outburst, but quickly regained his composure.
"It has no ammunition, Alex," he said,
gaining in animation once more.
"No moving parts, no explosive. It works on pure energy."
With his power pack here, Keela stooped to the bottom of the rack and heaved up a heavy backpack onto the table.
"You'll be good for 50 shots.
Alex bit his tongue to stifle an outburst. The weight of their environment suits was almost crippling. Now they would barely be able to move with this extra encumbrance.
"And you still found no way in which we can take conventional weapons into the field," sighed Alex at last.
"I'm afraid we've tried everything," said Keela. "But you know, you won't miss a normal gun once you've tried this. Believe me."
Alex failed to look eager. He didn't trust the look of this weapon one bit. He wondered who was in charge of testing these things now. He hoped it wasn't Keela.
"Anyway, I better be getting suited up now," sighed Alex.
Oh yes,
muttered Keela.
"It's this way.
The others should be in the suit rooms by now."
"You know, Alex,
everyone really admires your bravery on this one. I just wanted you to know, we'll all be praying for you." "I just wish we could still do this without bloodshed," sighed Alex. "They are the enemy, Alex. We must destroy them before they ruin everything. That is war."
He stormed off in the direction of the suit rooms, Alex following morosely behind. Thomas peered excitedly over his pile of books and papers on his desk. His heart sank. The source of the footsteps came into view, a severe-looking, middle-aged woman with her hair pulled back in a tight bun. She gave Thomas an icy stare, and he quickly dropped his gaze back to his notes, which lay unread on the table. It hadn't occurred to him that Miss Moran may not be working in the library, and all the excitement of his sleepless night dissolved upon this unhappy realization. The librarian picked up an armful of books from the reception desk and disappeared once more down an aisle, leaving Thomas alone and directionless. He glanced at the large clock on the wall above reception. He had 2 hours to kill before his meeting with Grace. He turned back to his work and was quickly lost once more in facts and figures, results from some of the previous standing point experiments.
"Miss Castle will come and take that pencil off you if you keep tapping it on the desk like that,"
came a light voice from behind him, full of laughter. Thomas spun around, and there was Susan Moran, smiling down on him.
Susan, Miss what?
He stuttered in excitement. He blushed as he fumbled with his words.
Your pencil. You were tapping it while you were reading.
She smiled, pulling up a chair and sitting down next to him.
I didn't think you were working here today. That is, I was just in here reading, sort of.
He stammered. Susan giggled lightly to herself.
I'm not working. I've got the day off.
I came to see if you were here. A direct stare made Thomas feel guilty for looking at her, and he clumsily sorted through his papers.
I just wanted to say how sorry I was for last night, she began, idly picking up his fountain pen and surveying it. I'm just really sorry about my friends. They're so childish. It's like being at school sometimes, living on this camp.
She put his pen down and looked long at him once again.
So, I was wondering if I could make it up to you.
Thomas fidgeted nervously.
I'm not really too good in pubs, he stammered.
Shh, came a chastising hiss from behind him. Thomas jumped and turned to see a furious-looking Miss Castle standing over them.
Miss Moran, I would expect more from you, she exclaimed in a firm, disapproving whisper. This noise is intolerable.
And with that she was gone again, stalking down the aisle with her arms full of books. Thomas looked at Susan in terror. She, by comparison, was in a fit of giggles. Thomas smiled in relief.
The old witch, hissed Susan, when she had calmed down a little. She should be running a prison camp or something.
Witch castle,
whispered Thomas absent-mindedly to himself, at which Susan burst into another fit of giggles. Thomas smiled in bemusement.
No, anyway, she whispered once more. It's my day off, so I thought instead of a gloomy pub, I could show you around up top. It's a lovely day up there, if you weren't busy or anything.
She went back to studying Thomas's pen in embarrassment.
I'd love to, really, thank you, said Thomas. I've got a meeting with Dr. Palmer, Grace, at 12, but if after that, it shouldn't be too long.
12? Echoed Susan.
You're going to have to run, she smiled.
Thomas looked up at the clock. It read nearly 5 past. He cursed to himself and started frantically gathering up his books and papers.
I must have got engrossed in my reading, he stuttered, as he bundled everything into a pile. I'm sorry, I'll have to dash.
Will you please be quiet? Came Miss Castle's stern hiss from across the room. If you cannot refrain from your cacophonous din, then I will have to ask you to leave.
We're just going, Miss Castle, beamed Susan with a grin, as Thomas's papers fell to the floor with a loud crash.
Miss Castle rolled her eyes and stalked off. Thomas got to Grace's office for 15 past, and knocked timidly on the door. Susan handed him the papers she had been carrying and smiled at him.
So, I'll be in the concourse when you get done, okay?
Thomas nodded nervously and tapped on the door again.
See you later, called Susan, as she walked back down the corridor.
Thomas watched her easy movements. He felt a knot of excitement in his stomach.
Oh, hi, Tim, came a voice from behind him.
It was Grace with another man. She looked tired and haggard.
Hello, Miss Grace.
Hello, Morgan, stuttered Thomas.
I'm sorry I'm late.
All right there, Thomas, smiled Morgan. It's good to have you on the team at last. You make them all apologise to you, mate, the way they treated you.
He shot a disapproving glance at Grace.
What? She laughed. I've said my apologies, thank you. Isn't that right, Tom? Now, late for what? She asked.
Our meeting, stuttered Thomas.
Oh, God, yes, of course, she exclaimed, putting her hand to her head.
Sorry, Morgan, I'll have to leave you to it for the moment. I promised Tim here.
Thomas, corrected Morgan with a smile and shake of his head.
Okay, Grace, I'll catch up with you later.
Are you sure you'll be all right?
Let me know how it all goes.
Goodbye, Thomas.
Now then, come on in, Tom, said Grace, leading him into her office.
The engines of the craft whined in protest, and the small compartment shuddered and pitched violently.
How many times have they tested this thing?
Shouted Alex above the roar, but Chris, who sat facing him across the cabin, didn't seem to hear. Alex peered out of the window next to him. The walls of the hangar were falling past them as the impossibly heavy-looking ship rose awkwardly into the air.
We're passing through the airlock now. Hold on, it might get a little bumpy,
came Peter's distorted voice in Alex's earpiece. and suddenly they were out into the field and the chaos of smoke and terror. Alex gasped at the scale of the armies drawn up around them. As the ship rose higher above the squat pyramid shape of the fortress, they could see the vast plain all around them, filled with thousands upon thousands of moving creatures. Each of them was unique in its own particular gruesome mutation. Smoke swirled all about them from 100 rents in the black rock, as the engine screamed with their desperate attempt to gain altitude.
"Where are they all coming from?"
yelled Yuri, peering out through the window. Alex thought he still looked pale and shaky, but he had pleaded to go with them once Alex had picked Peter and Chris for the mission.
"The never-ending," Alex heard Chris mutter.
And indeed, he couldn't see any break in the dark horde, all moving slowly towards the fortress. More explosions went up beneath them. A large creature, similar in overall shape to some giant bat, with skeletal wings and huge crab-like claws, blind and faceless, lunged towards an outlying bunker with a scream. It dashed itself upon the walls in a terrific explosion of orange flame and thick black smoke. As the fumes cleared, Alex wondered how the walls still stood after such an onslaught. His eye caught the movement of one of the swirls of red dust, a small cyclone darting above the heaving mass of nightmarish bodies. As he watched, intrigued by the nature of its movement, it detached itself from the horde and shot towards their craft at a terrifying speed.
"Peter, below us!"
he managed to call out before the dust cloud hit them with a crash, rocking the craft violently. Through the red swirling dust, Alex caught sight of a humanoid form, with great bat-like wings spread out behind it. The horrifying creature sped towards Alex's window like an arrow. At the last moment, the ship swung crazily on its side, plummeting back towards the plains. Alex was thrown madly about in his seat, but when the ship had steadied and levelled out, there was no sign of the grotesque creature. And then they were past the marching ranks and out into safety, the fortress disappearing into the distance, marked only by a dark pillar of ominous smoke hanging in the air.
"What the hell was that?" he heard Chris gasp in horror, as they sped over low hills of grey rock.
He didn't answer. He had caught a glimpse of the cruel intelligence in that bestial face, and was deeply troubled. The creatures they had met before in the field, although grotesque and nightmarish, were animal and unintelligent, and henceforth relatively easy to deal with. He had come across many such beasts in the early expeditions, and they could usually be avoided or outwitted fairly easily. But it was as if these other creatures, which travelled in a storm of red dust, were herding the others towards the fortress. Henschel and the others didn't suspect they fought a sentient enemy, and this gave Alex a deep sense of foreboding. He settled back in his seat, gazing out of the window as the ground sped past beneath them. They would be at the British base in about 4 hours. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.